A Contra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Contra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today we are wrestling with, well, perhaps the most towering figure in English literature, William Shakespeare.
Yeah, just saying the name can feel a bit intimidating, can't it? You think of high art, centuries of study.
Exactly, and maybe even some required reading you never quite finished back in school.
That feeling, that kind of worship, what the sources call bardolatry, that's exactly what we're digging into today. We're focusing on Germain Greer's really provocative intellectual biography simply titled Shakespeare.
Right, because of the popular story, the sort of myth, is that he was this, you know, untutored genius from the countryside.
Almost like the talent just dropped out of the sky.
But Greer argues that this whole romantic idea actually hides his real achievement. She sees him as this incredibly educated, very pragmatic, masterful craftsman.
And if you've ever felt like there's a bit of a wall between you and the bard, this deep dive is really for you. Greer's big insight, and it's quite liberating actually, is that the best way to get Shakespeare is through his plays.
Not through hunting for clues about his life.
Exactly. The works themselves, she argues, that's the main evidence of his intellectual life, not dusty old records from Stratford.
What I find really compelling about that is she doesn't just, you know, tear down the myth. She replaces it with something solid. She demystifies him, but it doesn't make his achievement seem smaller.
If anything, it makes it more remarkable, doesn't it?
Yeah. Thinking of him as a working professional, churning out hit plays constantly. That's genuinely staggering.
So to really get Greer's critique, we should probably talk a bit about her, Germain Greer. I mean, she's a major figure, right? Australian academic, public intellectual.
World-renowned, definitely. Most people probably know her for The Female Eunuch back in 1970. Huge book for second-wave feminism.
Absolutely defining. But it's crucial to remember, she's not just a commentator. She has serious academic chops in this specific area.
Right. Her PhD is from Cambridge, isn't it? And it was specifically on Shakespeare's early comedies. So she has real deep expertise here, grounded in the texts.
Exactly. And that combination, the deep scholarly knowledge, plus this iconoclastic anti-establishment streak, that's what makes her perspective so powerful for this subject.
She's not afraid to challenge the sort of dusty traditions that have built up around Shakespeare, the ones that sometimes make him feel distant instead of engaging.
Precisely. And her feminist viewpoint adds another really valuable layer, especially when looking at the women in the plays, the gender dynamics.
So she's kind of perfectly placed, isn't she? Knows the material inside out, but is willing to question how we framed his legacy.
Okay, so let's be really clear about what this book is and isn't. If you're picking it up expecting a standard biography, birth, marriage, the lost years, speculation,
you won't find it here.
Nope. Greer pretty much dismisses all that. She sees trying to fill in those biographical gaps as, and this is a great phrase, a pointless and distracting biographical heresy.
Wow. Why so dismissive? Why irrelevant?
Because for her, those sparse facts tell us almost nothing about his mind. Her goal is way bigger. It's an intellectual biography.
Okay. So building a picture of his thinking, his methods.
Exactly. A composite picture of his intellect, his moral framework, his artistic strategies, all based purely on the evidence in the plays and poems. The works are the direct reflection of his thought process.
So how does she structure that? How does she map out this intellectual portrait?
She looks at the recurring intellectual landscapes in his writing. The book is sort of built around these key domains. Poetics, that's the craft, the language. Ethics, how he explores moral questions, dilemmas. Politics, his take on power and society. And teleology, which is about purpose, fate, the big why questions.
That framework makes sense. Poetics, ethics, politics, teleology.
That's the architecture she uses to understand his mind.
Okay, let's unpack that toolkit then. Starting with poetics and his professional life, Greer really shifts the focus away from those mysterious lost years.
Yeah, she zooms right in on his education, King's New School in Stratford. She argues that was the single biggest influence, not some flash of inspiration, but years of really tough classical schooling.
So what did that involve? What did he actually learn there that mattered so much?
It was intense. We're talking rigorous training in Latin translation and, crucially, rhetoric, the art of constructing persuasive arguments, of using language effectively.
Ah, rhetoric. That makes sense for a playwright.
Absolutely. And absorbing classical mythology, especially the poet Ovid, his Metamorphoses gave Shakespeare this huge reservoir of stories about passion, transformation, conflict, stuff he used again and again.
So those lost years become less important because he already had this incredible intellectual equipment before he even left Stratford.
That's the idea. This mastery of rhetoric, you see it everywhere in the plays. It's the engine behind the dialogues, the debates, the soliloquies. His characters are constantly arguing, persuading, deceiving with amazing skill.
And that ties into her idea of poetics as pragmatism. He wasn't just an artist in an ivory tower.
Not at all. He was a working playwright. A businessman, actually. A shareholder in his acting company, the Lord Chamberlain's Men, later the King's Men.
So commercial realities shaped the art.
Definitely. His job was to write popular plays, plays that would sell tickets, plays often written, as you mentioned earlier, with specific actors in mind, like the star tragedian Richard Burbage.
Just imagine that pressure. Writing for a specific actor's strengths, for a specific theater.
And for a specific audience, his language wasn't primarily meant for quiet reading. It was crafted to be spoken out loud on a mostly bare stage to a potentially noisy live crowd.
So the language had to be dynamic, vivid, hit home immediately.
Exactly. It needed immediate impact, even while carrying layers of meaning. His genius was practical, functional. It had to be.
Okay, so if his craft was shaped by pragmatism, how did this very practical mind approach the big questions? Morality, fate, that sort of thing.
Well, Greer argues Shakespeare is all about the ethical dilemma, not the moral certainty. She links him to this idea the poet Keats later called negative capability.
Negative capability. What's that again?
It's basically the ability to handle uncertainty, doubt, ambiguity without scrambling for easy answers or quick resolutions. To just exist within the complexity.
So he presents situations, but doesn't necessarily tell you what the right answer is, like situational ethics.
Precisely. You can't just pull out a simple moral code from his plays. Is Macbeth's ambition evil? Yes, but where does it come from? Is Brutus's sense of civic duty noble when it leads to assassination? It depends entirely on context, psychology.
And the soliloquies become key there, right? They let us inside the characters' heads as they wrestle with these things.
Exactly. Windows into conscience. And connecting that to teleology, the search for purpose, Greer points out something quite striking for his time. His dramatic world feels overwhelmingly secular, humanist.
A silent heaven, you called it.
Yeah, that's Greer's phrase. Divine intervention, God stepping in. It's noticeably absent, especially in the great tragedies.
But what about, you know, the ghosts, the witches in Macbeth? If heaven is silent, what are they doing there?
Great question. Greer's take is that these aren't literal external supernatural forces dictating events.
So not actual magic.
Less actual magic, more like external symbols of the character's internal psychological states. Their inner turmoil made visible.
Okay, so the witches don't make Macbeth ambitious, they just voice the ambition that's already stirring inside him.
Exactly. Or the ghost in Hamlet gives form to Hamlet's own grief, his anger, his desire for revenge, which might be tearing him apart anyway. The focus stays relentlessly internal on the human experience here and now.
That fits with how death is often portrayed too, doesn't it? Like a final end. Lear's death, Othello's, there's not much comfort offered about an afterlife.
Very little. Even Hamlet's famous speech about the undiscovered country from which no one returns, that's pure uncertainty, not faith. And Prospero's speech at the end of The Tempest, accepting that everything fades. That feels like a core statement about human limits, about transience.
Okay, let's shift from the inner world to the outer world politics. Greer says Shakespeare wasn't just a cheerleader for the monarchy.
Far from it. I mean, his plays definitely reflect the anxieties of the time, the fear of chaos if the social order breaks down. But they also put that established order under intense scrutiny.
How so?
He digs into the psychology of power. Think about the loneliness and burden on Henry V, or the vanity and fatal mistakes of Richard II, or the paranoia that seems to consume almost every ruler in his plays.
And it's often not the powerful characters who have the clearest vision, is it?
That's a crucial point Greer makes. The sharpest political insights often come from the edges, from the powerless.
Like the fool in King Lear.
Absolutely. The fool speaks blindingly obvious truths that Lear can't see. Or think about the common soldiers in Henry V, questioning the king's motives and the justice of the war right before the big battle. He gives voice to dissent, to the human cost of power.
He shows all sides of the argument.
And this is where Greer's feminist background really illuminates things. She champions the female characters, women like Rosalind, Viola, Beatrice.
Who are often incredibly intelligent, witty.
And resourceful. Often the smartest people on stage. They use their wits, sometimes disguised, to navigate the restrictions of a patriarchal society. They actively try to shape their own lives.
But he also shows the dark side, right? the tragedy.
No, absolutely. Greer points out how devastatingly Shakespeare critiques patriarchal structures, especially male jealousy and possessiveness. Think of Desdemona, utterly destroyed by Othello's ego and insecurity, or Ophelia, driven mad by the political games played by the men around her. It's a really complex social commentary.
Okay, let's try to boil this down. What are some of the absolute key themes or messages someone should take away from Greer's perspective?
Well, first, definitely, the dangers of cultural mythmaking. That bardolatry, treating Shakespeare like a god, has actually gotten in the way of truly understanding him as a working writer. We end up worshiping an idol instead of engaging with the actual plays.
Right. Get rid of the reverence to make space for understanding. Second theme.
Genius is craft and pragmatism. This is central for Greer. His genius wasn't mystical. It was rooted in incredible skill, that rigorous classical education, and the day-to-day realities of the commercial theater. Professionalism fueled the art.
Makes sense.
And third, the primacy of the work over the life. Forget the biographical gossip. Greer insists everything you really need to understand. Shakespeare's mind is right there in the text. The plays are the biography of his intellect.
Okay, and one more.
Embrace moral and political ambiguity. Shakespeare doesn't give easy answers. He throws you into complex situations with conflicting values, justice versus mercy, duty versus personal desire, and forces you, the audience, to wrestle with them. He makes you think. He doesn't tell you what to think.
Yeah, those themes really capture her approach.
Yeah.
And her writing itself is so direct, isn't it? Let's touch on a few of those core ideas again, maybe paraphrased.
Sure. Like on biography, the essence is the living, breathing man isn't hiding in some Stratford archive. He's fully present in the intellectual structure of Hamlet or King Lear. It just completely redirects your attention.
Yeah, powerfully. And on ethics.
The idea that his plays aren't instruction manuals with moral answers. They're more like moral gymnasia, where you exercise your own ethical judgment. It puts the responsibility on the reader or viewer.
I like that moral gymnasium image. And finally, her challenge to that whole tradition of awe.
Yeah. Reverence is the enemy of understanding. Shakespeare deserves our critical engagement, not just our passive worship. It's basically a call to stop being intimidated and start thinking critically alongside him.
So thinking practically, how might listeners apply some of these insights in their own lives?
Well, one big one is embracing complexity. Mm. Greer's Shakespeare trains you to hold opposing ideas in your head at the same time, to be okay with ambiguity, that negative capability we talked about. That's a huge skill for leadership, for discussion, just for navigating our messy world.
Definitely. What else?
Mastering persuasion, or at least recognizing it. By focusing on his training in rhetoric, Greer makes us better analysts of language. How are arguments built? How is emotion used, maybe manipulated? How can words clarify or deceive? Really useful for cutting through media noise or political spin today.
Critical thinking skills, essentially.
Exactly. And maybe a third one, understanding power dynamics. Looking at how Shakespeare dissects power, the isolation it brings, the paranoia, the way criticism often bubbles up from unexpected places, gives you timeless insights. You can see those same dynamics play out in workplaces, in politics, everywhere.
Mm. Those are really useful takeaways.
Yeah.
So wrapping up, what was the most surprising thing for you in revisiting Greer's take?
You know, it was probably that point we touched on earlier. Realizing that grounding his genius in skill, hard work, and the pressures of the theater doesn't diminish him at all. If anything, it makes the sheer volume and quality of his output seem even more incredible. To do that under those conditions, it's mind-blowing.
Yeah, I agree. For me, the biggest value is just feeling liberated from that intimidating bard myth.
Mm.
Her approach makes the plays feel less like untouchable museum pieces and more like vital, urgent documents about human nature written by a brilliant professional thinker.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like she gives you permission to jump in, argue with them, interpret them freshly for yourself, rather than just standing back in awe.
Yeah, she helps you think with Shakespeare, not just about him.
Exactly. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by eCotra Foundation.